welcome to the Meta Church Podcast. We're thankful that you're taking part of your day to spend it with us, and we pray this message encourages you, inspires you, and leads you to experience the transformative power of Jesus in your life.
All right, as I mentioned, we are in the final week of our series called The Lead Up, a series which has been all about Easter, and it's actually kind of fitting that we're wrapping up this series the week after the Easter story or the Easter resurrection has been celebrated. And the reason why I say it's fitting is because what we've done is looked at the key events leading up to Easter or leading up to the resurrection and their implications for our lives. But the truth is we just move on from Easter so quickly. Like all of us, we just move on. Easter was just a week ago. Man, it's crazy because all this week I've been doing all this stuff. Like, for instance, here's just kind of like real simple, right? Let's kind of answer a few questions. How many times in the past week have you thought about Easter Sunday? Not like the Sunday church experience, but the actual Easter story, the actual resurrection of Jesus, okay? How often did you reflect on what Jesus did on the cross and its implications for, you're like, how often in the last week did you think about Jesus, what Jesus did on the cross and his resurrection and the implications that it has for your lives? How many times did you ask yourself or consider something along the lines of, okay, because Jesus died on the cross and rose from the grave, that means I can fill in the blank. How many times did you contemplate a statement or a thought or a phrase along those lines? Because Jesus rose from the grave, I can now blank. Now, chances are probably not that many. For most of us, probably not that often or not that frequently, if even at all. And it's amazing how we can spend all of this figurative, literal, and spiritual time leading up to Easter, and then just so quickly or so rapidly move on from it as if nothing ever happened. I mean, you just again, contrast these questions that I just asked with everything else you thought about this week. Take a moment to consider all of the things or to reflect on all of the things that you considered this week. Take a moment to think about all the things that you thought about and the emotional capita that you committed to different things going on in your life. Or how many things that you weighed heavily and you thought about and you pondered, maybe even you prayed about them this last week. And how much more time was committed or allocated or allotted to those things compared to the resurrection of Jesus, which literally we just celebrated 7 days ago. You know, maybe for you, Monday hit and you're like, I got emails, I got work projects I got to do. So I got a lot of thoughts to this. You know, you're stressing out at night or you're taking your work home with you or you're trying to do something because you got a big thing that you've got to do, a deadline you got to meet or a target you got to hit. Maybe for others, you had friends in town or guests in town or you had dinner plans. And so you're thinking about your social life and what's going on there and what things you need to get done and where you're going to meet them or where you're going to go out to. And so you thought a lot about that and you were thoughtful in how you're planning that. And so you got to figure that out. Maybe you're in a job transition. So you're thinking, you know what? I got to like sharpen my resume. I got to button up that LinkedIn profile. I got to make it look good. I got to make it fit, you know, with what I'm trying to do. Or maybe there's family situations and things that you're trying to figure out and resolve, family drama, family challenges that you surfaced or have kind of been at play. And so this week you gave and spent a lot of time to that. And lost in the midst of all of this is the fact that we just celebrated Jesus' resurrection and the implications that that's supposed to have on our lives and in our lives, and not just in our lives, but in each and every day of our lives. It's kind of like, okay, boom, Easter happened and that was great and it was fun. I dressed up. There was lots of food at church. I met some new people. I got to hang out and that was really awesome to see an apartment packed with people. Or that was really awesome service or message about healing or whatever it was. And so now, but I've got things I got to do. And so I just got to move on with my life and I got to get back to my normal and I got to get back to my routine and I got to move into this thing that I'm focusing on. And so many of us kind of just fall into that category. But before you go beating yourself up, and before it feels like, man, Ricky's like just dropping the hammer on me and he's pummeling me with this, before it kind of feels that way, let me at least offer two points of comfort so that you don't like walk away thinking, man, I'm just a terrible Christian. I'm just such a bad person. How could God love me? Look at me, Jesus. I'm so sorry. I didn't think about the resurrection. Before you go down that road, let me just offer two things of encouragement or two sources of comfort. The first is this. If you felt that way, if you feel like, yeah, I'm guilty of that, and the good news is that's exactly why we've done this series. Because if you remember going back to week one, what we said about the lead up was that we were going to look at the key events leading up to Easter Sunday. And what our goal was that if Easter was a product or if Easter was a brand, that it shouldn't be like a one-time brand or a one-time product that's celebrated once a year, but rather a lifestyle brand, something that we clothe ourselves in, something that we embrace, something that we embody each and every day of our lives. And so we talked about in week one about how Jesus was inviting us, invitation, how he was inviting us to see him differently. And then in week two, it was about preparation and how he was preparing us for the difficulties and the challenges that we might experience and face in life. And then week three was about expectation and how we can live with the right expectation for what Jesus wants to do and what God wants to do in us and through us. And then, of course, last week we celebrated Easter with restoration and the healing that Jesus has brought into our lives. And today we're concluding with activation. And so all of this has been about helping pivot and transition the Easter narrative from just a once a year celebration to an everyday embodiment. And so if you feel guilty, just know that's exactly why we've done this series. And then the second thing, if you say, you know what, Ricky, yeah, that was me. Like, I didn't really think about Jesus' resurrection at all. I didn't really think about how it impacts my life. I didn't think about what difference it makes in my life. I knew I celebrated Easter. I had a great time, but I didn't really consider what it means for my Tuesday or my Thursday at 7 p.m. That was me. And what I want you to know is that you're not alone. In fact, one of the sub-narratives of the Easter story is how quickly and how immediately even Jesus' own disciples lost sight of the implications of the resurrection and went back to doing and living their normal lives. That how quickly the disciples returned to their normal lives following Jesus' resurrection. In fact, the Gospel of John, one of Jesus' closest friends, writes it, and he writes about it in this way. Check this out. John chapter 21, starting in verse 1. This is what John says. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. And this is how it happened. Verse 2, several of the disciples were there. So he names them. Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Now let me pause here for a second. Okay, so he says, you have Simon Peter, you have Thomas, you have Nathanael from Cana, the sons of Zebedee, who were James and John, and two other disciples. So seven of the 12. Okay, remind you, Judas already is kind of out of the picture because he betrayed Jesus. So really, seven out of the 11, probably where they got 7-11, I don't know. But seven out of the 11 disciples were gathered together at the Sea of Galilee. Then notice this in verse 3. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. And they all said, well, we'll come too. So they went out in a boat, but they caught nothing all night long. Now, let me kind of set the scene for you or explain the situation, okay, in case you somehow managed to miss this. This is following the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus has already resurrected. The disciples are already aware of that. And seven of the 11 remaining disciples are hanging out in Galilee. Seven of Jesus' closest friends, seven of Jesus' supposed leaders of this movement that he introduced are hanging out around the Sea of Galilee. And apparently they're just bored. Apparently, they can't think of anything better to do than to go fishing because Jesus has risen from the dead. He's already appeared to them. And yet they made their way back. They trekked back from Jerusalem to Galilee, about a five-day journey. And they just returned back to their lives. And the best that they could do, the best that they could think to do, wasn't to tell everyone about the Messiah, wasn't to tell everyone about Jesus' resurrection, wasn't to proclaim that Jesus is alive and good news has come. The best they could think to do was to go fishing. Like literally was to go fishing. And while they were out fishing, it says that Jesus appeared again and he calls out to them. And yet they were so removed, they're so unaware that they didn't even know it was Jesus. So Jesus gives them, John writes about this and he gives them some bit of instruction. He tells them, hey, have you caught anything? They say, no, we haven't caught anything at all. So he says, throw your nets on the other side. So they throw their nets on the other side, and only when their nets fill with fish, in fact, so many of them that John numbers them at 153 fish, only then do they realize, wait, this is not a normal person talking to us. This is Jesus. And so they rush back to shore. They make a breakfast. They spend time with Jesus. But listen, here's what you got to remember. This situation, they're back fishing. They were fishermen before Jesus. And post his death, burial, and resurrection, they return back to fishing as if that was the most important thing they could do, as if that was the most significant thing, as if that was the culmination of their lives or the culmination of what Jesus intended. I mean, make it make sense. And here's the crazy part. According to John, this was the third time Jesus had appeared to them. So he didn't show up to them once and they were like, okay, well, that was that dream. That was that crazy. No, he showed up a second time. And that second time they even ate together. So they saw it was a physical body. It was a physical person. It was someone who sat with them and engaged with them. And then now the third time, three times Jesus has appeared to them after the resurrection or post resurrection. And they are still mustering up the best they can decide is sufficient. And while I can't speak definitively on behalf of the disciples, and while I don't know their intent or their motives or their exact reasons why, clearly, following the resurrection of Jesus, the best they thought they could do was just go back to normal, to return to who they were and what they were doing before Jesus showed up in the picture. It was kind of like they just assumed, like, okay, good, Jesus has resurrected. Thank God, because that was really sad. And I missed my friend. I hated that he died. That really, if he would have stayed dead, that would have really sucked because that would have meant that I gave 3 years of my life to follow someone who at the end of the day is just dead. So God, thank you that he's alive. Man, I'm happy. My friend is okay. Things are good. And you know what? Now that I've seen him alive, I guess that just means I can just go back to Capernaum or I can just go back to Galilee and I can just hang out. Maybe I'll get some of my buddies together. You know, we'll hang out, crack open a few beers, go fishing, see if we catch anything. I mean, like Peter said, well, I'm going to go fishing. Like, that's how bored they were in their heads. Like, I'll go with you. Like, what? and this is crazy and borderline. Somehow the fact that Jesus had resurrected from the dead seemed lost on them. And this seems completely baffling and inexplicable, except for the fact that we've already, you and I, have already acknowledged and maybe even admitted that we do the same thing. That we too are guilty. Are forgetting about the resurrection, that we too can neglect the implications and the significance of the resurrection, that we too just assume, okay, that happened and that was great, and now I just go back to normal. But here's what you need to know. The resurrection of Jesus was meant to be an activating agent, not a concluding moment. The resurrection of Jesus was meant to be an activating agent, not a concluding moment. In other words, it wasn't meant to be the ending point, but the starting point. It wasn't meant to be a finish line, but a starting line. It wasn't meant to be a conclusion, but a beginning. Which is why, at one of his appearances to the disciples, Jesus had to give them some explicit and complete instruction, not just to his disciples, but to each of us, you and I, those of us who have placed our faith in Jesus, those of us who have believed in Jesus, those of us who have called him Lord and Savior and said, I will follow you. He gave this instruction to his original disciples and he's given the same instruction to you and I to motivate us and to compel us to action because the resurrection was about activation, not idle, not being idle or just kind of staying put. And this is what he said in Matthew chapter 28, another gospel, another one of his disciples. Here's how Matthew described Jesus' words. Starting in verse 18, it says, Jesus came and told his disciples, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. And be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. You see, Jesus' sentiments in these statements, Jesus' sentiment in these sentences here, what was pretty clear. It was as if Jesus was saying, listen, it's not over. It's not done. My work has finished, but your work has just begun. And because of your belief in my resurrection, because you've seen me, because you know me, because you touched me, because you've experienced me alive after I've been killed, you should never go back to normal. You should never return to normal. Normal should never be okay. It's not about going back to the boats and going fishing. It's not about going back to the lake and hanging out by the shore. It's not about going back to your parents' business. It's not about going back to your normal life where I found you. It is something new. It is something different. And I am catalyzing and activating something in you. Normal should not be the situation or normal should not be what we return to. But this is difficult, isn't it? This is so hard. And this is so challenging because normal is familiar. Normal is comfortable. Normal is acceptable. Normal is stable. Normal is tolerable. Normal is safe. normal is normal. And normal is what we all so often revert to, despite the instruction to do the opposite. But normal doesn't transform lives. Normal doesn't change the world. And listen, I need you to hear this. Normal doesn't resurrect from the dead after 3 days in the grave. So normal should not be what we desire. Normal should not be what we pursue. And fortunately for us, Jesus' words in Matthew 28 give us some clarity, give us some guidance, give us kind of the kick in the pants that we need to activate this faith that we have in Jesus, to live this out and to make a difference. Jesus gave two instructions. He offered two commands, really summing up in two simple words that you and I are to follow. And if we were to follow these things, it would make it so that we would never be back to normal. It would make it so that our lives would never be back to normal. It would make it so that our world would never be back to normal. And those two words are simply this: go make. Go make. Jesus gave this instruction to his disciples, and he's given this instruction to us: go and make. Those two words became the foundation for a global movement, the catalyzing agents needed, what the disciples needed to hear, to not go back to normal, but to move forward with what God wanted. And they became something, the genesis for everything you and I already know or understand to be Christianity or the Christian faith and the church. In fact, the only reason you're here today, the only reason you're here listening on the podcast, the only reason you're here watching online on YouTube or on Facebook, the only reason you're sitting in an apartment living room with a bunch of other people on the Upper East Side of Manhattan is because someone somewhere, or a series of someone's somewhere, decided to take Jesus up on his words and decided to go and make. The only reason you are here today is because someone somewhere said, I need to go and make. And as I conclude this series today, as we wrap up this series called The Lead Up, there is one key event, and it is here found in Matthew 28, that activates us to live out the Easter story, to fulfill the narrative, or to complete our role in this narrative, so that the Easter story becomes something we embody day in and day out, not just once a year, whatever Sunday it happens to fall on the calendar. And so as we conclude, what I want to do is focus in on these two words. And I want to give us a charge, if you will, just as Jesus did with his disciples, to embody these words, to live into these words, to fulfill these words, so that we never return back to normal. And the first word is simply go. Go. Now, if you've been around metaphor a while, then you know, from time to time, I like to introduce maybe the Greek word, or introduce the meaning of the Greek word, because sometimes, quite honestly, reading through the scriptures or the Hebrew in the Old Testament, but sometimes it's helpful. Sometimes it makes a big difference. We see something in English, but it doesn't fully translate to the original meaning. And so sometimes it's helpful to understand that. And so I like to do that from time to time. But the reality is, in this situation, you don't have to do that, because the Greek word for go literally means go. Like, there's no ambiguity. There's no uncertainty. The meaning is not hidden in Jesus' words. It was very direct. It was very distinct. And it was ultimately very, very clear. The Greek word used here means to go, to travel, to journey with. And I think this is ultimately what Jesus wants, right? He wants us to go. He wants us to be active. In other words, what he was saying is that, listen, you've gone back to your place. You've stayed idle. You remained local. But actually, I'm calling you to go. And I think there's two ways of applying this, or two ways of understanding this, in a figurative and a literal sense. And in a figurative sense, of course, we should go with Jesus. We should go where Jesus goes. We should travel with Jesus. We should journey with Jesus. We should listen to what he has to say. We should press into what he has to offer. We should hear his voice, and we should respond, and we should say, or we should be aligned with wherever Jesus is going, and we should go with him. And listen, I don't want to state the obvious here, but you cannot go with Jesus if you're unwilling to follow Jesus. And this is interesting, because unfortunately what we see happen in a lot of Christianity is that people kind of stop at the point of believing. Like, I believe in Jesus. I believe in his resurrection. I accept that in my life. I confess my sins. I'll accept that salvation. And I'll believe he is my Lord and Savior. I believe he resurrected. But we weren't called to simply be believers. We were called to be followers. And that requires action. and movement and going. So there's this figurative sense or a figurative understanding of the word go, but there's also a literal sense because, again, listen, let's be honest. We all want to kind of like skirt and be like, all right, like, okay, just figuratively, I'll go with where Jesus wants me to go. But there's a literal action behind this to go with Jesus, to journey, to respond in faith to whatever he's asking us to do and to be sent in this. And you see this with the original disciples. You had some like Thomas, who took the gospel and went into Asia, and tradition holds that he arrived and ministered in what is now modern day Chennai, India, ultimately to be martyred for his faith in Christianity, for his faith in Jesus specifically. And then you had others like Peter and James who were called to the Christians and the believers in Jerusalem and Israel and kind of the surrounding regions there. And so they went to those people sharing the good news of the kingdom, sharing about the resurrection of Jesus. And yet you had others like Paul who felt called, and Timothy who felt called and burdened to minister in Europe. And so they traveled modern day Europe, advancing the kingdom work, talking about the resurrection, sharing about the hope in Jesus. And so they went. You see, God is always calling all of us to people and places, to people and places, literally to people and to places. Those people could be at your place of employment, at your work. Those people could live on the same floor as you in your apartment building or in your neighborhood. Those people could be someone you bump into at the store or someone you see on a consistent basis around the block or around the neighborhood or wherever it might be, at the gym, whatever it might be. God is calling you to people and he's calling us to places. And sometimes that requires that we move and go somewhere else. But oftentimes all it requires is that we start where we are. You know, years ago, I graduated from Bible college and you know, I'd have friends who were like, oh, I just feel like God's calling me to the mission field and he's sending me, you know, to some foreign country or whatever. And it's like, cool, awesome. And they're like, yeah, I just can't wait to get there. And literally, like, these are real life conversations, probably happened a half dozen times where people would reach out to me like, yeah, I'm just frustrated because I'm not on the mission field or I'm not in this other country. And so my response as a young, like 20 something year old man, we graduated college, like I'm catching up with this friend. I'm like, well, what are you doing now? Like where you're at in Ohio or where you're at in Florida or where you're at, you know, in Georgia, wherever it is that God is positioned, like who are you reaching there? Like who are you going to there? And they're like, oh man, I'm just focused on trying to get to Nicaragua, or I'm just focused on trying to get to Togo, or I'm just focused on trying to get to Central America. Like, and it's like, why would God send you somewhere else if you aren't unwilling to go where you've been positioned right now? And it just doesn't make sense. And I think like for a lot of Christians, there's this fear like, well, what if I say yes and God sends me somewhere else? So listen, you don't have to worry about that if you're not concerned about reaching the people right around you. Let's be honest. Let's shoot straight with you. We are called to people and places here and now. And you know, one of the things that for me has been so important in my life, I've always wanted to be open to wherever God sends me. I want to go where he tells me to go. I want to do what he tells me to do. I want to reach who he tells me to reach, to people and places. I don't care. You know, I graduated college in Florida, and immediately upon graduating, Kristen and I were married, and it felt like God was saying, hey, it's time to go to the Pacific Northwest, outside to Portland, Oregon. Listen, I'd been there a couple times to visit, but I never envisioned myself living in the Pacific Northwest. And yet God was saying, it's time to go. That's where I called you to. That's the place, and there are people that I've called you to minister and to reach. So I went. And we were there, we had a great ministry, built great friendships, great relations. In fact, some of the best friendships we've ever had were there in that place. And after 5 years, God says, hey, it's time to go again. I'm sending you to New York. And so we came to New York in 2013, and we were here for a year and a half, and we were doing what God called us to do, and things were difficult and challenging and hard and crumbling. And then at that moment, God says, okay, now I'm releasing you. I'm sending you to South Carolina. I'm calling you to South Carolina. And now it's time to go. And so we went to South Carolina, and we were there for 2.5 years, and we thought we were going to be there longer. And then one day God's like, hey, surprise, I'm sending you to New York. It's time to start MetaChurch. And so now you've got to go. And we literally, Chris and I, our family, we've packed up, we've moved. We've gone wherever God has sent us. We've left family. We've left friends. We've left church communities. We've left ministries that we've loved. We've left cities and houses that we've loved. And yet all to pursue what God has done. And recently someone said something to us that really, like, honestly, like, it just makes my blood boil. It makes my blood boil because we were talking with this person, someone who knows the journey, someone who's been a part of the journey at various points and been supportive of the journey, a believer, a Christian. And this person commented about us, well, like, you guys have chosen this. It's hard in New York and things are challenging there, but you guys have chosen this. Like, you could choose to do something else. You could choose for it to be easier. And it made my blood boil because, yes, we have chosen to stay here, but God chose us to be here. And so we've chosen to be obedient. We've chosen to be faithful. We're not just like, oh, okay, yeah, like, could we go somewhere easy? Absolutely. But that's not what God has called us to. We want to do what God has called us to do. We want to go where God has called us to go. And I don't care what it costs, quite frankly. I want to be submitted and yielded to that because I know that's where the greatest meaning and significance in my life is going to come. Now, you contrast that, right? You contrast like, oh, well, you guys just chose this. Like, you just go somewhere easier. Contrast that to this other conversation we had recently with a couple, young family, who's contemplating a move to another country in obedience and in faith to what God has called them to do. And we were talking with them. They were sharing and we were like, man, this is really impressive. Like, it's crazy that you guys are thinking about doing this. And they're like, yeah, like, and honestly, it's just a random opportunity that presented itself, or a seemingly random opportunity. And yet within a matter of weeks, they were praying into it. And they're like, yeah, this is what God wants us to do. So we're going to leave behind our home, our family. We got this kid, this baby boy, and we're going to pack up and move and do this because God has told us to go. Like, we always said, we want to go where God sends us. And so we're like, well, what about, you know, like the family and the baby and all this stuff? And they're like, yeah, like, he'll be fine. And the husband was like, I'm just worried about the chickens. Like, what do we do with the chickens that we've got? Because we've got to, you know, figure out where to put them. And so, like, it's just like, that attitude is what we as followers of Jesus should have. God, I'll go wherever you send me. If you're going to send me right here in this city, if you're going to send me across the hall to my neighbor, then I'm going to go to my neighbor. If you're going to send me across the city to this place of employment, to my place of work, then I'm going to go across the city to this place of work. And one day, God, if you tell me I need to go across the country or I need to go across the world, then God, I pray that I have the courage to respond and say, yes, I will go wherever you send me. Because listen, going with Jesus is always a spiritual decision of obedience and surrender. Going with Jesus, both in a literal and a figurative sense, is always a spiritual decision of obedience and surrender. It's about saying, you know what, God, I want to follow you. I will obey. I will surrender my will to pursue what you want. It's not anytime we say, you know what, God, I'm not going to go there, or I'm not willing, I'm not interested, I don't want to entertain. What we're saying is, I don't want to listen to you. I don't want to have what you have for me. I don't want to pursue what you've called me into. I don't want to give up what I am holding on to. And so I will not go. But may I remind you that you are here today because someone else, or a series of someone else's, decided to go. You see, we're not supposed to go back to normal. We're supposed to go out and to go forth. So we must go, but we also must make. That was the second command Jesus gave, to make, specifically to make disciples. In fact, actually in the Greek, this is actually one word. Make disciples is one word. But again, here there's no ambiguity. There's no uncertainty. There's no hidden agenda. There's no hidden meaning or kind of entendre that you got to try to uncover or discover. In fact, the simplicity of this all was that we are called to make disciples, which simply means to help someone become more like Christ. In fact, here's the interesting part about this, because when we talk about making disciples in Christian circles, I know for many Christians, it feels intimidating and overwhelming. In fact, if we were to do a poll or a survey of everyone listening and everyone watching right now, and we were to say, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident do you feel that you could make a disciple of Jesus? My guess is the majority of us would rate ourselves relatively low. And it's not because we're bad people, but it's because, listen, I know me. And there are times where I struggle to follow Jesus. And there are times where I get things wrong. And there are times where I don't have it all figured out. So how in the world, Ricky, how in the world could I help someone else follow Jesus when I don't get it right? In fact, make a disciple. I don't even know that I qualify as a disciple. I don't even know that I fit the bill or fit the description when it comes to being a disciple. And may I remind you, or may I just speak gently and kindly and say, listen, God's not interested in your perfection. And he's not interested in mine. He's never asked me, he's never asked you, he's never commanded us to live perfectly so that we can make perfect disciples. In fact, he's just simply said, hey, go and make them. Teach them to follow me. In fact, making disciples, sometimes we overcomplicate it. Sometimes we make it this big, like overwhelming and intimidating thing, but making disciples is as simple as helping someone follow Jesus in belief and in practice. That's it. It's that simple. Helping someone follow Jesus in belief and in practice so that they see, okay, this is what I believe about Jesus and here's what it looks like to live this out. And the reality is we all can do that. We all have people in our lives that we can lead, intentionally lead, to help them become more like Jesus in belief and practice. And it's not that complicated because listen, all you gotta do is just say like, hey, here's what not to do. Here's what to do. Here's who God isn't. Here's who God is. And that becomes the starting point for helping people follow Jesus. And listen, I'll prove it to you. Anyone can do this because you know when I first made disciples in my life? You know how old I was? You're not gonna believe this. I was 16 or 17 years old. I was entering my junior year of high school. I was a teenage boy, a smelly, messy, definitely not put together teenage boys. And I was given a group of three fifth grade boys, three other 10-year-old boys, and told, hey, mentor them, disciple them, help them follow Jesus. No one gave me an outline. No one gave me a book. No one told me what Bible passages to read. They just said, hey, you're going to meet with these kids. And so I did for the better part of 2 years, every Wednesday night. I would meet with these three boys and we would talk and I was far from perfect. So a lot of my discipling was like, hey, you're going to get older and this is the situation you're going to face. Don't do what I did. Don't do this. In fact, I think I messed up and I think the way of Jesus is actually probably more over here than it is over here. So just learn from me. Don't do this. Instead, do this. But there were some things that I also knew. There were some things about God's love and his forgiveness and his grace that I could teach these young boys. And you know what we experienced over the course of those 2 years? Two of those three boys ended up meeting Jesus, giving their lives to Christ. Two of those three boys I'm still connected to. The third one's already a believer, I should say, but I don't know where they're like, but two of those three boys I'm still connected to on Facebook. And they're adults. One of them's married, has a family, loves Jesus. Like they're connected into their local churches. All because a 16, 17-year-old kid who knew nothing about what it meant to disciple someone was willing to say, hey, here's what it looks like to believe in Jesus and to follow him. And many of the times, it doesn't look like this, so do this instead. And the reality is this is something all of us can do. In fact, I'll put a qualifier on it. If you've been following Jesus for like, let's say, more than 6 to 12 months, you can disciple someone. Yeah. If you've been following Jesus for more than 6 to 12 months, you can disciple someone. In fact, you should be discipling someone. You should be leading someone. You should be helping someone become more like Christ, to believe in him, to follow him, to surrender to him. Because this is what Jesus commanded us to do. This is what he instructed us to do. And this is something everyone can and should be doing. You see, MetaChurch, the way we make the Easter story more than just a one-time event, more than just an annual celebration that we partake in, dress up for, celebrate, rejoice, and then move on from. The way it becomes more than that is when we realize that the resurrection was about activation, specifically inviting us, calling us, commanding us to go and make disciples. And when we follow those two instructions, when we live those things out and repeat them over and over and over again, what we find is that this Easter story becomes part of us. It becomes part of our ethos. It becomes part of our lives. It becomes part of our makeup, our DNA even. When we go out, when we go to that coworker, when we show up to that place of employment and we live and love like Jesus and we serve and we care about our teammates and our coworkers and our colleagues and what's happening in their lives. When we walk down the hallway in our buildings and that neighbor is walking by and we speak a word of encouragement and we speak something instead of ignoring them or pretending like we didn't see them in some weird, awkward New York City type of way and instead acknowledge their presence. When we pull into that grocery parking lot and we show up and we see that the same cashier we had last week is available today and we go and say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. I've never gotten your name. Okay, thanks for sharing that. I'm Ricky. When we go to the people and the places that God has called us to, and we engage and we're intentional about how we engage in those spaces, it unlocks the door to their hearts. It unlocks the opportunities that God has for them to see and to experience and to feel the goodness and the richness of God's love in their lives. And then when we make disciples, when we make disciples, when we choose to say, you know what, there's someone I can lead, there's someone I can show the way of Jesus, and though I may not get it right, and though I might be far from perfect, and though I feel ill-equipped or insecure about this, and I don't know exactly how to do it, I'm going to try. I'm going to start. And listen, let me tell you, if 16, 17-year-old scrappy, like wild, messed up Ricky Ortiz could do it, then so can you. If God could use me at that age to impact kids' lives, then he can use you to do the exact same thing. Now, I want to ask, or I want to conclude with a final question. And this question is kind of like a what if. A what if. Like, what if the Easter story took hold of our lives? What if this became more than just a once-a-year celebration? What if these themes that we've covered throughout the course of this series of invitation, Jesus inviting us to see him differently, of preparation, of saying, hey, things are going to get tough, but here's how to respond in the difficulty. Here's how to respond in the uncertainty. What if this expectation, you know what, God, I'm going to be anchored in hope. I'm going to believe in what you're going to do. I'm going to believe in what you came to do. This restoration, God, I've got healing in my life. And this activation, God, I'm going to go and I'm going to make disciples. What would happen? What do you think would happen if this became part of our lives in our church? What if, like, just four of us said, I'm going to live this out? What if all of us said, I'm going to live this out? How would your life be different? How would the lives of the people you're connected to, your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, your spouse, the doorman in your building, the people at your work, the people you come into contact with at the gym or at the grocery store, how would they be different? And how would our city and our world be different? And while I don't know the exact or the precise answers, I do believe we have an example. Because somehow, 11 measly people who, post seeing a resurrected Jesus, thought the best they could do was go back to fishing. Somehow, those men and women, when they decided to live this out, when they decided to embrace the Easter narrative and make it a daily part of their lives, changed the world that you and I live in without a cell phone, without internet, without a car, without an airplane. And they did it all simply because they were willing to go and make disciples. So what would happen if the Easter story became part of our everyday lives?
Thanks again for joining us today on the MetaChurch Podcast. To connect further with us, find us on Instagram or visit us online.